Gender equality, women's economic security, and expanding access to education are just some of the issues that will be the focus of the South African government delegation to the International Conference on Population and Development Summit in Nairobi, Kenya, from the 12th to the 14th of November, which will be held under the theme Accelerating the Promise. The delegation will be headed by the Minister in the Presidency, Mr. Jackson Mthembu, and the Minister of Social Development, Ms. Lindiwe Zulu. Follow at GovernmentZA on Twitter and on Facebook to keep up with the proceedings. A message from government.
Nompumelelo Siziba on SAFM.
It's our business executive leadership feature, and today we speak to a man who's worn many hats over his career. He's been a teacher, he's been a CA, set up his own audit firm, the first black audit firm in KZN at the time. He went on to become the CEO of Telkom and the First Rand Group. On the line, in line with his passion, pardon me, for learning and education, he's played important roles in the education sector. He's even set up schools. I'm joined on the line by Sizwe Ncasana, a man who, like I say, has worn multiple hats. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us on the line. So just take us back to your background, where you grew up and your socioeconomic circumstances at the time.
Well, I was born in Newcastle in KZN, in KwaZulu-Natal, and at a very young age moved to Lesotho because my father was a school teacher. And he decided, him and his friends, that he was going to go and teach in Lesotho.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I started schooling.
Super.
You know, so in the cold mountains of Lesotho. And then a few years later, we went back to Durban, which is where in Umlazi Township, you know, I did the rest of my primary, what is now called intermediate phase,
mm-hmm.
in other words, sort of senior primary, and then high school. So I went to boarding school for the first time in what was then Form 4, which is now an equivalent of grade 11.
Mm-hmm. So being a public figure, some of us are aware that you're passionate about education, having been involved in a number of initiatives and eventually setting up a school. So, you know, what sort of value was placed on education by your family?
I guess, you know, the fact that my father was a school teacher played a very important role because, you know, I grew up in a family where there was always discussions about education. My father was always doing some work on, you know, whether it was marking exam papers or preparing for his classes and that kind of thing.
Yes.
But also, you know, in my younger years, after I qualified as a chartered accountant, as a young accountant, I was a lecturer at the University of Zululand for a couple of years. So, you know, even as I was setting up the audit practice, as you mentioned in my intro,
yes,
I was also a lecturer at the time. You know, so, you know, I've always had this passion for education. So even when I was in corporate, like for instance, you know, I was one of the founders of the Association of Black Accountants, ABASA now, and one of our key roles and objectives was to go out to schools to educate, you know, learners or children about accountancy. And then even when I was at Telkom, I was, you know, always involved. I was the chairman of the Telkom Foundation. Mm-hmm. At First Rand, it was the same thing. And those foundations' key focus areas was education. So I've always had this passion for education.
So in 1989, when you established Sizwe & Co., the first black-owned audit practice in KwaZulu-Natal and subsequently in Gonki, Sizwe & Zabula with your partners, what prompted you to set up your own thing? Was it a case that you were conscious that being a black CA, you wouldn't really go that far in an established audit firm because of the dispensation at the time?
Well, interestingly, none of the big firms at the time were prepared to hire us as black trainees, training accountants. If you look at, you know, the first, I would say the first 20, maybe even 50, group of chartered accountants, or African chartered accountants particularly, that qualified in the earlier years in the 80s, we would have done articles in what was very small Afrikaans firms that did some audits in the homelands, actually.
Hmm.
So, you know, it was similar with me. And when I then qualified, I'd started, you know, looking at opportunities. In fact, a lot of people, particularly professionals, because there were no black-owned companies then. So there were a lot of professionals, though, medical doctors, lawyers, a few NGOs that wanted financial advice, wanted their books written, or even just audited, like, for instance, the Attorney Trust Account.
Yes.
So that's how there was a demand even when I was working for a corporate in the sugar industry at the time. So it was a very obvious development or evolution.
Yes.
That, well, you know, there was a need, there was a demand out there that was unmet. And that's how the firm Sizwe & Company, which is now SNG Consulting, was established.
As you've already referred, you know, you had a corporate career and you were appointed as CEO of Telkom in 1998. You were the CEO at the time when you took Telkom to list on the JSE and the New York Stock Exchange. Just tell us about your experiences there, being a CEO in the New South Africa, a black CEO in the New South Africa, and what reflections you have of that particular period of your career.
Well, you know, there was a very clear objective of the new democratic government of what Telkom was supposed to do. That included the fact that a lot of black people were not serviced in terms of telecommunications in the country at the time. It's now 95, 96. And secondly, the skills and development of people, especially given that, you know, Telkom is a highly technical environment, needed a lot to be desired because, you know, black people were only found in the lower ranks of the organization as technicians or as assistants, that kind of thing. So we needed to develop skills from black people, you know, particularly. Thirdly, it was important to then drive efficiencies in this company because it had just been separated from the post office and therefore it, you know, came from the roots of being a government department,
yes,
which was inefficient, you know, didn't really look at people as customers and that kind of thing. So, and that was very exciting. So if you look at just those objectives, including the listing which happened in 2002, 2003, it was a very exciting time of restructuring the company. I'd been running the consultancy practice of, you know, the audit firm. For me, it was an opportunity to look at some of these advices or proposals, you know, that we were giving to clients and see if they actually worked. And it presented major opportunities for some of us who were really privileged at the time to be in the kind of position that we're in.
Yes.
So, and we accomplished quite a lot in the 8 years that I was at Telkom in terms of all those key indicators and objectives that the country wanted to pursue.
Mm. Of course, being a CA, your skills are very transferable. It doesn't matter what sector. But then you went from a telco then to a financial services company, First Rand Group. Of course, like you say, you were there initially as a regular worker and then you later on became CEO. You'll remind us of your tenure as CEO at the First Rand Group. But just tell us about your experience there. I think in a way, you were fortunate to be presiding over a major financial services company at a time when the economy wasn't doing so badly. I mean, the situation is a lot more different now.
Yeah, well, you remember that we had the global financial crisis in 2008, 2009.
Yes.
I was already banking then. So anyway, there was a time, actually, when the financial service sector was really in dire straits. I mean, there were a number of international banks, as we all know, that collapsed,
yes,
during that time. And South Africa, even though we're somewhat immune, you know, say from the global financial crisis, we were impacted because, you know, banking, especially in a country that is open in terms of trade, as in South Africa, it means that you get impacted because you have an open trading platform and so on, as well as currency. So, but importantly, there are a couple of things here. You know, you mentioned my migration from the auditing sector to telecoms to banking.
Yes.
You know, we all talk about the fourth industrial revolution today. And lifelong learning and understanding that as individuals we can unlearn and learn new skills is becoming even more important. And I've sort of taught myself to take myself out of a comfort zone to expose myself to a new sector. It's a lot of work. It can be unnerving. Because, you know, you're dealing with the unknown, but it's an important thing that all of us can do. But more importantly, just to answer your question, financial services, look at, you know, the bank at the time, First Rand, with its divisions, which are F&B, West Bank, R&B. And, you know, when I started, we still had the insurance companies, Discovery and Momentum. There were a number of opportunities to make sure that we were a leading bank in the country as well as in the continent, because at that stage, you know, if you look at, for instance, the retail bank, F&B, it wasn't their leading bank at that stage.
So yes.
There were a number of things that needed to be done to drive innovation, to expand how we're serving customers, especially using digital platforms and so on, that everybody has now followed, you know, in the subsequent years.
Yeah.
So it was quite an exciting experience to be part of a team that was innovative, that was entrepreneurial, where we did a lot of things to position the bank. And I think the team and ourselves were quite successful in doing that. And this cuts across not just F&B as an example, because even RMB and West Bank were already leaders in their space, sort of continue to drive customer service and the growth of the business, not just domestically, but also outside of our borders.
Hmm.
And one of the major things that happened in my tenure was to, for instance, focus on Africa as well as India. So, you know, we built businesses, the banks for using Greenfield's operation. In other words, you know, starting from scratch, not acquiring or buying existing businesses. So we started a bank in India, in Tanzania, in Angola, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Kenya. And, you know, it was obviously a lot of hard work because, you know, starting any business is hard work.
Yeah.
But very fulfilling in terms of redirecting where the group was going to pursue its growth.
So once you left First Rand as CEO, you went back to pursue your passion of education. You set up the Future Nations Schools. You founded the Sifiso Learning Group, and you're the chairperson of the Ikusasa Student Financial Aid Program, which helps to fund youngsters in tertiary education who come from poor and so-called missing middle families. You really went whole hog with the whole education thing. Why are these ventures so important for you? And presumably, it is gratifying to see the impacts of these interventions.
Yeah, one of the ones that you didn't mention is I'm a co-founder of the National Education Collaboration Trust, which is a trust that brings together organized business, labor, the teacher unions, to work with government to improve the quality of basic education. So we work with the Department of Basic Education.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question, you know, with my passion in education, we can only set up private schools. But, you know, private schools in this country only cater for about 6%, 7% of school-going age children. And therefore, 93% or thereabouts are learners that are still in public schools. So we can't leave those children behind because they make the majority of our young people in this country.
Yes.
And that is why the NECT, the National Education Collaboration Trust, was set up. And it's particularly involved in working with government around policy, around service delivery in education, improving the quality of teaching. And as an example, I mean, we've developed a whole lot of tools around curriculum tracking, curriculum coverage, lesson plans, the training of principals, the training of school management teams, the focus on mathematics and English. Right now, we're running the national reading campaign for government, for the Department of Basic Education, mm-hmm. which is very important to improve the ability of our children, especially at the young age, to read for meaning, because we know we're not doing well in that area.
Yeah.
Whilst at the same time, areas like policy, the migration of early childhood development from the Department of Social Development to Basic Education, we're helping government manage that transition. We've helped government, you know, for instance, with the implementation and the rollout of the three-stream curriculum, which is, you know, the not just the academic curriculum, CAPS curriculum that we have, but also the technical vocational and the technical occupational curriculum, which is now being introduced in our schooling system. So, you know, it's quite important to do that because as a country, we can all talk about the fourth industrial revolution, but if we are not, changing the way that learning and teaching takes place, we're going to be left behind and our children are going to be left behind.
Yeah, and so getting the basics right.
Exactly. We're running a campaign using some of the lessons from Future Nation schools that we started that are project-based, that develop all these 21st century skills like collaboration, communication, creativity, and critical thinking. So we're running a pilot in the public schools right now, which looks at new ways of teaching.
Yes.
And how we can make sure that we're imparting these critical competences and skills to our learners, as opposed to the, you know, just focusing on the knowledge piece.
Sorry, carry on.
So it's quite important to do all of these things because they're about moving our country forward and making sure that our children can be set up for the future and can grow our economy.
Mr. Nlasana, I was going to say we're running out of time, but this is a very important question that I need to ask you. So what are the few lessons you can share around leadership and its importance, particularly in the South African context?
One of the most important things is to understand that for the country to grow and develop, we've got to develop skills. That's the first thing. And secondly, if you're a leader, it is important to really listen to people. In other words, you hire the best talent that you can find. And once you've got the talent, you drive the culture of innovation through listening to people. In other words, you know, you don't have all the answers as a leader. And if you are a servant leader or a leader who's consultative, you know, you can achieve a lot in any organization. It doesn't matter which sector it is.
Yes.
So those are just some of the important lessons that I can share.
That's super. Thank you very much, sir, for talking to us and sharing your career journey with us and all the very best. That was Sizwe Nlasana. He's the founder of Sifiso Learning Group and a whole lot more.